Hi, this is Richard Edelman, and you're listening to The Trust Makers.
Alex Heath, the U.S. Head of Social Impact and Sustainability at Edelman. Today, I'm joined by Jada McKenna, the CEO of Mercy Corps, a nonprofit organization dedicated to alleviating suffering, poverty, and oppression by helping people build communities. Mercy Corps provides humanitarian relief to 37 million people in more than 40 countries. Jada, welcome to the Trust Makers.
Thank you so much for having me today.
You've been CEO at Mercy Corps since 2020. What made you want to take on a role leading this organization?
I've had the privilege of being in this sector, working on the funder side at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and then the U.S. Agency for International Development. And then on the implementing organization side, Mercy Corps, I held COO roles at two other very trusted NGOs. And Mercy Corps has always been one of the great actors in our sector. It is always known for innovative programming, interesting partnerships, and really being able to work in tough environments. I got the call about this job right as COVID was beginning. And I was like, this is a great organization. People around the world need it more than ever today. And if there may be something I can offer to this, I should pitch in and explore. And it just has turned out to be a wonderful fit.
I can understand that call and that feeling. You and I share a background and passion for international development, and I've heard of your organization for many, many years and admired you, so I love the work that you're doing. But you began your tenure in a difficult moment for Mercy Corps, a challenging time. It's a complicated story. We're not going to go into it in depth here, but your predecessor resigned amidst a reputational crisis connected to how the organization responded to allegations of sexual abuse perpetrated by the co-founder. How have you worked to rebuild trust in the organization with employees, donors, and with the public?
My philosophy on this has always been that trust is earned every day in every action. And when I joined, the board had been dealing with the aftermath of that. And they shared that belief in the rebuilding trust, but transparency is the key. And from the beginning, that was the absolute approach with all of our stakeholders. We have not tried to smooth anything over or hide anything. We made the decision early on to provide very regular updates on what we were doing. We made some commitments about how we would change our organization and some of our practices early on. We've become a stronger organization. We've strengthened our legal ethics and safeguarding functions. And we've always tried to keep open communications to answer questions. It's important going forward that we own our history and where leaders made missteps, but also that our legacy honors the hard work of thousands of global humanitarians on the front lines of the world's biggest crises and the work that we've done to create a better future for all.
Now, I'm sure that's been an incredible journey for you over the past 3 years. You mentioned at the end, really the people that you're working with, the world's humanitarian workers and the people who are working with you in the vulnerable communities all over the world. And NGOs are doing incredible work everywhere in the world, nonprofit organizations, non-governmental organizations. And as part of the Edelman Trust Barometer, we survey trust in 4 institutions every year, and we've been doing so for over 20 years. The level of trust in NGOs has declined in most countries last year, according to our 2023 Edelman Trust Barometer. Now, and this is a shift, NGOs used to be the most trusted group that we survey. Now NGOs are less trusted than business, after being equally or more trusted for decades. Why do you think there's been this shift?
I think it's an outcome of what is a very good process of people getting more sophisticated about how they give and where they give and increased vetting. And so that need to earn trust is there with us every day. We've also seen some rise in direct giving. I think there are a few reasons that this has come up. I think people are naturally a bit distrustful of organizations that are seen as pass-throughs, right? So we're implementers of the work. And our industry is really reckoning with a history of white saviorism and colonialism that persists today and that perpetuates power imbalances that put communities in the back seats when it comes to resource allocation and decision making. And as people's trust in other institutions ebbs and flows, I think those factors become more important. At Mercy Corps, for sure, and across the sector, we are reckoning with those power imbalances and reckoning the change the way that we work. The vast majority of our staff, almost 90%, is from the communities that we serve. And our goal and what we've worked towards is that communities really designing their own solutions to the problems they face. We've seen that giving is up, which underscores that there is still a level of trust in our sector, but the global need is far outpacing giving. I think what we're doing and what we've been committed to is really being transparent about our results, where we are, the types of programming that we're doing, and also talking about some of the benefits of working with an organization that has a track history of doing this work in multiple countries, and how we take learnings and data and evidence to kind of keep improving that is important. And actually the feedback both ways from all the transparency has been very good. I'm hopeful the sector as a whole will re-earn the trust that may have been lost.
I love this notion of transparency and trust that you've brought up a couple of times. I think it's very powerful both for your fundraising efforts and for your work with a variety of different stakeholders on the ground. That decreased trust that we've seen across the sector, has it specifically affected your work in any way? Is it more affecting the fundraising? Is it more affecting the work in the communities? Or have you, as you already mentioned, been able to alleviate that a little bit just with the work and the rebalancing the staff and thinking about the power dynamics and the imbalances and working through transparency? Just a little bit more specific.
Absolutely. Like I said, in our fundraising, our giving has been up, but also the world's needs are greater. And so Americans and other donor countries have tended to be generous. You know, you have seen the rise in conversations or chatter about, are there local organizations I should give to instead? And I think we've just had to make the case around all the things that people get from organizations like ours that may have stronger policies around making sure that people are safe and understanding like rules and risk and things like that. But ultimately people make their choices and those are respected. We also work in deep partnership with a lot of organizations in Ukraine. Almost all of our work is being done through local partners. So talking about that in the communities that we serve and doing the work, I think we have been very fortunate that we've been in a lot of our communities for a long time. So people know our staff, they trust our staff, that hasn't eroded. The other place where we have been working hard, I don't know what to call it, but I think it's that place in the countries where we work, where there are local nonprofits or others who are like, they know that we get funding from different governments or other things and they'd be skeptical. We're very transparent about who our funding is. And we also work really hard to be in constant partnership with local organizations. And right now, we really think about partnership beyond just the sharing of money. It really is about an equal distribution of power and decision about where those resources are allocated. We have these accountability mechanisms that we employ to get feedback on how people feel about us on those dimensions. And it's just something you just keep plugging at all the time.
You mentioned a few of these that I think are relevant. We have a lot of audience members who are going to be thinking about social impact. We have individuals or people who work for businesses who are looking to invest in social impact. You mentioned a couple of the key traits of some of the work that you do, but as you're thinking about giving advice to folks who may be looking for a trusted nonprofit partner, what are the key things that they need to be looking for to make sure that they're delivering the most impact with their efforts as well?
There are a few things that I would suggest people think about when making those important decisions. The first, which probably comes as a natural to all, is really doing the due diligence to get to know an organization to make sure that your brands and your values align. So look at their leadership, their budget, their board, their openness to co-creation and impact. I often think you want an organization that's also willing to tell you no sometimes as well, because that's an organization that's committed to doing what's best for the people that they're serving versus what they can get money to do. The other piece of advice I would offer to organizations looking to partner with NGOs are that longer term or multi-year investments can be transformational. You know, a lot of grant support sometimes is for like 1 or 2 years, an immediate thing. But to truly innovate, you need time and space to iterate. You need a little bit of space to maybe make mistakes and to talk. And so shorter term funding doesn't really allow as much time for that relationship to build and to figure out how we can expand. Just like businesses, nonprofits need the flexibility to experiment. I think that's why there's a dialogue. There may be a perfect product that a company has, but maybe when they come to us, we can explain, okay, but in this environment, there's not consistent access to power, or people won't be able to use this. So just understanding that we're working in some of the world's harshest environment and we need to work together. And then I think that longer term relationship also allows us to develop that trust and flexibility with each other. We kind of understand what's important to each other. Some of our strongest partnerships, it's almost like a joint organization and we just feel very committed, and it's a wonderful feeling when it's done well.
Where have you seen the greatest cross-sector collaboration in tackling some of the biggest challenges we face? And where do we need to see stronger collaboration between governments, private sector actors, nonprofits?
We've actually been very successful in doing some really transformational corporate partner relationships. And I think those are often grounded in the company's strengths matching our strengths. For example, we've had long-term partnerships both with Starbucks and with Cisco. And with Starbucks, it's been around their holistic approach to environmental sustainability in coffee-growing communities. So we've been able to work for 20 years together, sharing best practices, addressing common issues. And we are looking at the well-being and the different needs of coffee growers. So it's very symbiotic. Cisco has been another great partner. They've made a long multi-year partnership with us to increase technology delivery in the areas we serve. And they've just been a huge partner in terms of offering employee expertise, being okay when their products aren't the right fit. When their products are the right fit, celebrating. We were much more prepared to handle the pandemic with all of our sites in very remote areas, even hooked up thanks to the Cisco partnership. So I think that business partnership is there when there are more symbiotic interests. I think day to day to work in these places, we have great communities, great relationships with local communities. I think where there could be more work, and it's not more work, when we think of the local community, we also think of local private sector partners as well. We have a venture fund. And so I think working with local businesses, really getting deep in that context and really having those solution sets be both ways, right? You can never make the assumption that you know best or that you're coming in with the best tools. And very much understanding like where people are and what they're doing and digging deeper from there.
When this podcast is released, global leaders across the public, nonprofit, and private sectors will be in the midst of the United Nations annual General Assembly meeting and New York Climate Week. We're recording prior to these meetings, but I know that you and I are both thinking about those meetings and everything that's going to be happening in New York at that time. What are you hoping to see accomplished around Climate Week and UNGA?
The problems that the world faces are multidimensional, right? They can't be solved with anyone. Government alone can't solve their problems. Nonprofits will never equal the funding that government has. And we will never match capabilities that businesses are able to bring and the growth that businesses can bring. So when we look at things that we'll be talking about at UNGA, rising global conflict, the climate crisis and what that is doing to all of us, right? But how it's really affecting some of the world's poorest people, and other challenges that are just way too big for any one organization or sector to take on its own. You know, when you're looking at the war in Syria or the war in Ukraine, governments are definitely at the table trying to solve this, but without NGOs, without private sector, those places collapse. And so all working together to use our strengths, but mainly fighting hunger, really helping communities adjust to the impacts of climate change, and looking at ways to alleviate the suffering of conflict and to proactively help to prevent conflict that drives a lot of these other things. They're also interrelated. This opportunity at UNGA for people to be talking to each other across sectors is quite important.
I think one of the things that many of us in this space think about during these global convenings is what's missing and who is missing. What do you think is missing from the dialogue at these convenings, and how can we ensure that any overlooked perspectives are included in the conversations that we're having?
That's an interesting question about what is missing. It's hard when you're in New York, you're meeting in fancy hotels or fancy venues. obviously there are people there from lots of countries and there are people there from local organizations, but that voice of the day-to-day person that is suffering through something, it would be wonderful in those environments if that took the lead. Also, there are more and more venues to hear from youth in the countries affected, but you know, a lot of the places, countries where we work in Africa and Asia, the average age of the population is 20, sometimes less than that. And so really looking ahead at the next generation, what they're thinking, what they're facing, how they are constructively part of the solution, and what their ideas for to make sure that we are doing things that are relevant and really have impact locally. So I know there have been some creative ways at times to really make the participants feel and see what's happening, and hopefully we can continue those. And then hopefully we're talking about these things across generations as well.
You work a lot with the private sector. Our Edelman Trust Barometer has found that 7 in 10 employees, mostly in the private sector, but 7 in 10 employees want their jobs to have societal impact. And on the other side, we've seen that a majority of consumers are more likely this year than they were last year to consider a brand's health and environmental impact when making purchases. From your vantage point, where do you see companies walking the talk on addressing critical social issues, especially on climate change?
I see the greatest examples when people really intermesh this with their business operations and outcomes. I mentioned Starbucks earlier. We'll go back to that. Starbucks has sustainability reports it puts out. They have a foundation that's focused on climate things and even some facilities that they've built around the world to kind of provide free support to farmers or in areas that are very accessible to some of the poorest people in those communities. I was in Indonesia with some executives from Starbucks just a few months ago. What was wonderful is that when I was visiting some of the participants that work with us, there were Starbucks employees. So Starbucks partners who are baristas or other things that have been taking their personal time with Starbucks support to work with some of the participants in our program and to make sure, like one participant said that she had never been to Starbucks, right? And to have those Starbucks partners being able to interact with parts of society that aren't in their normal day-to-day to be able to introduce each other and to see the commonness in values around that is very effective. And the fact that Starbucks has been a long-term partner, you know, we're able to really talk about what we're doing in coffee growing countries and continue to improve that work together. And their employees/partners, they're just as motivated. They love what they do. They love their company. And they love these opportunities that come through these partnerships to access communities that they may not get to experience otherwise, and to bond over the thing that they all love the most, coffee.
Jada, you've had an incredible career doing very impactful work, and now you're leading an incredible organization delivering humanitarian services across 40 countries. What I see in my day-to-day is that we need more and more people doing the kind of work that you do. What advice do you have to young people as they embark upon a career in impact? How should they think about their work, and how do they think about building a career?
I love that question. Thank you for asking. This sounds really trite, but this career, what I'm doing now, is my dream. It's absolutely what I'm meant to be doing. I did not start my career thinking that at all. I started my career in the private sector as a consultant and then in financial services. But going into my job, I said to different partners that I was really interested in doing something on the side around Africa. And I just wanted to pick up all the tools and be the best I could be in that business environment, and then hope that ultimately one day I could apply those. And so when I switched sectors into this space, my first focus was giving people in these countries access to markets. But also I discovered that the skills that I had picked up, and I think the same thing applies to people who are in public health, who went to medical school. I use those skills from McKinsey. I learned that sometimes a lot of organizations that are nonprofits don't have as many people that are skilled in like running a business or running an enterprise. So really, our organizations and impact, we need everyone coming together. Like so many different things. We need products geared towards certain populations. We need organizations that can work with them. We need, you know, those communities to be thought of in the design. And so I think no matter what someone's career path is, there is a path to impact. A great marketing and communications person helps us to make to get our story out. I really think being the best at what you're really good at and then thinking about how to apply that to those organizations is wonderful, because if I just had a team of people that understood public health or agriculture, like, we wouldn't be as effective, right?
That's inspiring. Thank you. That's all the time we have for today. Jada, thank you for sharing your insights and expertise. And to our listeners, thank you for listening to The Trustmakers. If you enjoy the show, be sure to subscribe and consider taking some time to write a review. And if you're looking for more trust context and applications, subscribe to the Edelman Trust Institute's newsletter via the link in the show notes. We'll be back next time with more insights on how to build trust in today's society.
Thank you for tuning into The Trustmakers, an Edelman podcast in partnership with Advertising Week, where we speak with leaders and other trust builders across institutions. See you next time.